Stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Welcome back to Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione. In this segment, we're going to talk about President Biden's various executive orders. And John, we could probably fill the next five shows with nothing but talking about these executive orders.
He's done so much.
It's an unbelievable avalanche. But I wanted to let our listeners know that there was an article in the Wall Street Journal on March 2nd by Jacob Schlesinger, called Biden's Hurdle, Courts Dubious of Rule by Regulation, that if you're interested in what's going on with the executive orders, I think that's a very good place to start. And it's a good article that gives you some background on these executive orders. And let me just, before we get into some specific executive orders of concern, Vec, let me just remind our audience that executive orders do not have binding force outside of the executive branch. They are not supposed to. The function of an executive order is for the president to direct other people in the executive branch how to behave. Now, when those people do things in response to those executive orders, that conduct can have impacts on third parties. And if that conduct doesn't have statutory authority behind it, in other words, if Congress has not also approved this sort of given statutory authority for the executive branch to do these things, then the people who are harmed would have standing to sue over the lack of authority for these executive orders. But some people have been saying, "Well, how come you haven't already sued on these executive orders?" And the shorter answer is there has to be somebody who's harmed in order to have a suit. And a lot of times there's a little bit of delay before you have someone with standing to sue, because the initial instruction from the president to his subordinates in the executive branch, that action in and of itself may not harm anyone. So you have to have that next step before you might start seeing some lawsuits against some of this activity. And one of the first ones that I wanted to talk about, Vec, has to do with Title IX. We know that in the Obama administration, that then Vice President Biden was very active, because he said so, in pushing the Obama administration to change the law. And folks might remember that Obama had a pen and phone strategy he talked about. But at least, Vec, Obama's pen and phone strategy happened starting in 2011, after the Republicans took over the House of Representatives. Biden is starting from day one with his pen and phone strategy, and the Democrats control the House and the Senate. What's going on here?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we think about parties too much. The framers obviously didn't know there was going to be parties, or at least some of them didn't. And they created the structure for the institutions, the House, the Senate, and the presidency and the judiciary. I think that this is a power grab by the executive in the face of the Congress, even when there is congressional control. It's almost like, you know, Woodrow Wilson didn't seem to like Congress, that they even existed. He thought that he should just run everything. I think there's more and more of that and in the executive, particularly here with what we're seeing. I think when you do control both, you know, all branches, or at least certainly the legislative and the executive, you should at least make a stab at getting Congress to weigh in and then signing the bill, like he is doing today on the COVID relief program. It was all contested, and it was very argued left and right and all the rest of it, and then he's signing a bill. I mean, you can argue about policy all day long, but no one can say that that's not how you're supposed to change the parameters of the government.
Right. It might be a $1.9 trillion mistake, but at least it's a $1.9 trillion mistake that went through the constitutional process and regular order, at least as far as we can.
Right. It was done properly. You know, they didn't go around and say, oh, this is tough. I don't want to argue about it. I don't want to subject what I just did to the voters. I just want an agency and the president just to write something on his own and then let the chips fall where it may. And I can say I had no responsibility. Don't vote me out of office.
Yeah. Well, and you know, my concern here and the way that the New Civil Liberties Alliance operates is it doesn't tend to take policy positions on different subjects. So, for example, President Biden has issued an order purporting to apply the Supreme Court's ruling from last year's Bostock case across the government. And for those who don't remember, Bostock was the decision saying that when Title VII banned discrimination on the basis of sex, that also covered discrimination on the basis of gender identity and sexual orientation, which was a controversial decision. Justice Gorsuch from Colorado wrote that decision last year, but in so doing, he limited it to the Title VII statute, just the employment discrimination context. And now, via executive order, President Biden is trying to say that decision applies to education and housing and immigration and everything else, a whole bunch of statutory areas that Title VII does not cover. And, you know, I assume that the legislators who support this are breathing a sigh of relief because they don't have to do their jobs and actually, you know, stick their neck out and vote for something that may or may not be popular in their home constituency. But that's not the way this is supposed to work. You can't just take a Supreme Court decision and treat it as having massive consequences when it was limited to one statutory area. But that's just one example. That's Executive Order 13988 I'm talking about in this particular example. But Vec, I think you have another executive order that you were concerned about in the immigration context.
I do. And Michael Barone, who's sort of one of the old watchers of Washington, and you might have seen him on TV, but he has an article today in the Washington Examiner about what's happening on our border and why it's happening. And I've met Michael. I respect his opinion very greatly, so I tend to believe him when he talks about what is occurring and whether the facts are there. And what happened is that President Trump made an agreement through executive order. He didn't get a treaty, but he got an executive order with the current president of Mexico, who's Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador, and everyone calls him AMLO down there, or at least we do on this side of the border. And he made an agreement with Trump. They got along, and he said, listen, while we're going to stop Central American influx, Central American migrant influxes into Mexico, and we are going to allow people looking for asylum in the United States to stay in Mexico while their asylum is determined. And what this did was, certainly during COVID, it stopped masses of people coming across the border. And you might have heard about kids in cages, and there were retention facilities for unaccompanied minors, basically. And so there were about 2,000 of them.
Dating back to the Obama administration.
Correct. But there were about 2,000 of them during the Trump period. And now there's 3,200 because of moral hazard. What happened? Biden issued one of these executive orders. He didn't do a study. He didn't let the head of ICE or anyone else do this through normal processes. He just abrogated that agreement that the head of Mexico was perfectly fine with and actually wanted to continue because it helps his country too. People aren't flooding into Mexico during COVID time because of that. They know that what's going to happen to them. So people are rational. They make rational choices. That includes Central Americans, South Americans, poor people, rich people. They know their interests. Well, they said, I'm not going to go because I'm just going to stay in the camps on the Mexican side of the border. Well, with this executive order, President Biden has removed all that overnight. And overnight, we now have twice the amount of asylum seekers and illegal aliens coming across the border. And they're letting them out even if they have COVID and they're being sent to their family members or purported family members, as Michael says in this article. And they're not even being checked for COVID. So all this mask wearing and all these other mandates that he issued an EO on that too, wearing masks on federal property, unless apparently you come here illegally, in which case you can have COVID and go where you want.
Well, American citizens who are traveling abroad have to have a negative COVID test before they come back from at least certain countries now. And, you know, that to me, you have a constitutional right to return to the United States as a citizen. And yet the administration is trying to say, and they're trying to do this indirectly by forcing the airlines to have these policies and so forth. But what it amounts to is a restriction on return to the United States, which seems to me like a huge constitutional problem. And as you say, at the same time, folks are streaming across the southern border without COVID tests. It makes no sense to me.
And so, as you said, they're only supposed to apply to the government. And that's true. And so they've only applied this to the government. And the government, the federal government, has the responsibility on immigration. And there's lots of court decisions. When the states try to do something, the federal government can just say, no, you have no power to do that. Constitution gives us full power over who comes in and out of the country, the federal government.
I was just going to say, there's two others in the immigration area, Vec, that you may want to chime in on. There's an executive order that undoes the ban on federal grant money going to sanctuary cities. And there's also he's rolled back the so-called travel ban, which had applied restrictions on countries where we were not able to vet folks who were coming in from North Korea and Iran and Syria and Venezuela. And that was badmouthed as the Muslim travel ban. But of course, it did not apply to the vast majority of Muslim countries. And it applied to countries like North Korea, where the only mosque is in the Iranian embassy.
And not only that, it didn't apply to Muslims. It applied to people from these countries that were either hostile or we couldn't vet them one way or another. But that's true. So now he said that he would do these things. President Biden ran on these things. But as far as the flooding of the border in springtime with illegal migrants, who he then has to put into these, what, you know, people call cages, you know, no Congress voted for all this. Hi, welcome back. We're going to continue talking about executive orders and how, without any checks and balances, they operate. And Mark has brought up very clearly that it's only supposed to affect the government because the president has to have a way to direct the government to comply with his policies under the law. So, but it does have effects on private parties. Now, the EO I was just discussing that ended the Remain in Mexico policy that had been worked out between President Trump and AMLO, President Obrador of Mexico. Well, once that was gone, migrants started flooding in because they know that once you're in America, very hard to get rid of you. You claim asylum, you've got to have a hearing. That hearing, you can show up or not show up. Maybe they'll buy your asylum claims, but more than 90% of them are not valid. And so
AMLO sounds like a sleep aid, by the way, to me.
It does. But, you know, he was supposed to be a very radical guy and everyone said that Trump they'd never get along. Well, they both felt that unrestricted migration across their borders was probably not in the interest of both countries. And I don't know that the present administration would disagree with that, but they wanted to get rid of this. And Biden, there's two things going on. He wants to fulfill his campaign promises. But the other thing is, I don't think that on any executive order that the executive really considers all the angles or the moral hazard. And what happened here? People flooded across the border because the United States is a good place to be. And there's a COVID matter. All the things Mark and I have been discussing, the CDC order, everything has been done to make sure COVID doesn't spread. And what do? We now have an EO that lets illegal migrants into the country, and they don't want to keep kids in cages, so they put them on a bus and send them to someone who says they're a relative. And they don't do any COVID testing. So how does this affect the private party? Well, Greyhound bus lines, which takes a lot of these folks, says we're not taking anyone on our buses because we've got all these COVID people you've put on our buses. Think of the liability to Greyhound. If you don't think that there's a California lawyer who's going to sue Greyhound for rashly allowing illegal aliens on their buses to infect Americans in California, there's a bridge in Brooklyn that I can sell you. There's somebody waiting to file that case against them. So what is
or Greyhound? San Francisco?
Yes. So great. I don't, you know, it's interesting. Everyone.
It's always the Brooklyn Bridge people want to sell.
It's the Brooklyn Bridge that some scammer is selling, right? San Francisco, they have less scanners? I don't know, but I don't know that anyone tried to sell San Francisco. My sons say they always destroy the San Francisco Bridge in every movie, but they don't sell it.
Well, you know, I'm getting us off topic here, but right now the Golden Gate Bridge, they have a problem because they put up some sort of wooden slats all along the rock walkway and turned the thing into a giant harmonica that is making really loud noises and bothering people miles away.
Holy
but anyway, but
I had not heard that. But in yes. any event, so
speaking
so
now, of administrative agency actions,
yeah. So the private party Greyhound has to change its policies that to be more restrictive to everybody because of this EO. So who would have thought that? The question of which side of the border, well, some people would have thought it, but it's a question of what side of the border people wait to have a hearing, which is a total administrative action, but it's had enormous consequences for the border region of the United States, Arizona and New Mexico and Texas, and I presume California, although California has a narrow area and it has a wall, so I'm not sure it's affecting California. But I do think that we don't always know what these administrative actions are going to have until after they've happened. And, Mark, you have some other executive orders that have
been effect? Yeah, well, you just mentioned the wall. And, Biden had a presidential proclamation. I guess this wasn't formally an executive order, but he declared an end to the emergency at the southern border and put an end to further construction of the border wall. And I just think it's amusing that apparently Biden thinks that walls don't work, except that he's now put up a giant barbed wire clad fence all around the Capitol in Washington, D.C. So I guess walls don't work except when they do. Is that what we're supposed to
get from that? That was done by Nancy Pelosi. I don't think Biden had anything to do with it. So, I want to be fair to the Biden administration. There wasn't an emergency until they issued this order.
and so he's quickly now declared an emergency or no?
He hasn't gone back. We'll see.
I think
it's interesting. You know, I think it's interesting what's happening. And as the weather gets better and as more people get vaccinated, probably more migrants are going to come. Do I know that? Do I know any migrants or do I know anything that's happening? No, but once again, people are rational. They make rational decisions. It doesn't matter if they're rich or poor, whether they're foreign or Americans, they want to make decisions based on their best interests. And if the penalties for doing something go down and the opportunities are great, you're going to see more people do it. So I think that if there is anyone who wants to come to America from South America or Central America, as the impediments to doing so go down and the payoff from doing so go up, I would predict that more people would do it. That's kind of my crazy view.
Well, another executive order. Or executive memo, Biden has ordered the Office of Management and Budget to modernize the process of regulatory review by ensuring it properly accounts for quote-unquote equity and other sort of non-cost benefit-y types of things. So he says that the review process should fully account for benefits that are difficult or impossible to quantify. Well, all that's going to do, Vic, in my opinion, if you allow such hazy benefits into the calculation, it's going to totally gut the cost-benefit analysis that OMB is famous for doing so now. Because any regulation they like, they'll just say that it has this sort of difficult to measure benefit.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of a couple of things. First, this cost-benefit idea that the regulations' benefit should outweigh its costs has been put in the law, and it was not put in the law by a bunch of right-wingers. One of the main pushers of this view to make sure that regulations were more beneficial than costly was Cass Sunstein, who is a liberal academic, but his view was, number one, we don't want to just regulate. We want to have regulations that people will agree are more beneficial than costly, which if you want lots of regulations, it makes sense because more people will support your regulations. Once again, people are rational, including Cass Sunstein. This was brought in. This was brought into the law, and it's been very successful in stopping many ideas that sounded good, but when you actually looked at the ledger, they were more costly than beneficial, or changed it. OMB would have the regulation changed. And our friend Paul Noe, who writes on this, has always pushed this, and he worked at OMB, has always pushed this cost-benefit analysis. But by putting these new unquantifiable issues on the balance sheet, it basically makes OMB, once again, have no standards because it's impossible to have that way. So you just do what you want, and cost benefit goes out the window because it can't be cost benefit if you don't know what the cat costs are. So I suspect that this is really because it bound the executive. And so I think that's why we're seeing this, because now the executive's unbound. You can call something equity, but is it equity if it has more costs than benefits? I mean, if you put in a policy and you say, well, this is equity to everybody in the United States.
Well, when they say equity, though, they mean that's a woke term, right? So they're talking about making sure, for example, that the vaccines are distributed in a way that's consistent with giving equal numbers or proportional numbers to people in different racial groups and that kind of thing. That's the kind of equity that they're talking about with this order, which adds an additional layer of complexity on top of things. Because if you say, for example, well, we're only going to, you know, we're going to give the first round of vaccines to people over the age of 65. Well, the U.S. population as a whole, there are fewer minorities over 65 than there are under 65. So then you start to think, well, maybe you can't distribute them that way, even if scientists are saying that you want the older folks to get vaccinated first because they're the most at risk.
Well, I have to say, Merriam-Webster says equity is justice according to natural law or right, specifically freedom from bias or favoritism. But then B is something that is equitable. I think you're probably right about that, but I would make it broader than that, and I assume there's ideological purposes. But once OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, seems like a very bad organization to be doing airy fairy.
They're economists,
stuff, yeah. Right? They're economists and accountants. It's like, you know, they don't have the best parties in the world over there. But they do get things right as far as numbers go. So I think you should probably leave it with that, because it also reminds me a lot of what happened with the banking collapse when you were allowed to assess goodwill, like goodwill.
Which, right.
It exists, but it's hard to quantify. And so they allowed banks that were acquiring savings and loans to account for their goodwill. And then the government took away the value of the goodwill, and there was a huge, huge hit on all the banks.
Government caused.
Yes. And if you get the wrong numbers and then government changes its policy because no one can look at a spreadsheet, you just kind of – It's more like putting your thumb up and deciding whether the picture is straight or not, rather than a level. So,
well, maybe the last one to talk about here is Biden ordered the Occupational Safety and Health Administration to issue science-based guidance to employers on temporary emergency standards to protect them from COVID, including requiring masks in the workplace. But I'm just wondering if the science-based guidance will pay attention to when masks might not be required. So, for example, if you're in your office with the door closed, are you still going to have to wear a mask under these guidelines?
Like me right now. So, anyways, Mark, I think we'll watch these EOs and how they play out. Okay. joining us.